This is October 11, 2012, in Vrindavan Nectar Devotion, Chapter 1. So in Chapter 1, Rupa Goswami is giving six characteristics of pure devotional service, or six results from pure devotional service. So first he tells us what pure devotional service is, and then he says what you'll get by doing it. Because you might say, well, why would I want to do that? So the Sanskrit names are up there on our foot chart, as well as the stages at which they are fully realized. Now, it's not that they're not all realized before that stage. So we have Klesh Agni. What does that mean? Free from material distress. And Subhada. Auspiciousness. So that happens in sadhana bhakti. So when you're still in the stage of sadhana bhakti, advanced stages of sadhana bhakti, you'll feel that completely. But you should feel some of that even in the beginning. Then when you attain to bhava bhakti, what do we have there? And what does that mean?
No desire for
very rarely achieved, and
no desire for liberation.
Yeah, no desire for liberation. A happiness above liberation. Something above liberation. Because bhava is above liberation. We talked about how there's a stage of neutrality with the material emotions. And bhava, which means emotion, spiritual emotion, is above that neutrality. And so in bhava, you still get the kleshagni and the shubhada. You haven't abandoned them. So you get those two, and then you get two more. And then at prema, what do we have? And what does that mean? Attracting to Krishna. And the other? Yes, actually the literal meaning is the special nature of prema is impenetrably condensed and concentrated. Something like burfi. Super condensed and concentrated happiness. I know a devotee named Sandra Ananda. So we're going to be looking at each of these characteristics. Today we're going to be looking at three of them. And the first one we're going to be looking at gets rid of all suffering. This goes back to what we were talking about a little bit before about wanting to adjust your externals. So generally, when we're suffering, what do? We adjust the external things in our lives, correct?
Yes.
Right? Get a new pillow, get a new friend, move to a new place, eat different food, something. We adjust something in our external environment. But the point here is that all of our suffering comes from avidya, ignorance. And particularly this is ignorance of identity. And to understand this, one has to understand that everything we do is based on our identity. Wish I had the time, but there's a lot of psychological research that shows that people make decisions in life based on their identity. So we each have a sense of identity materially, correct? I'm male or female. I am a certain age. I am from a certain country. I am from a certain cultural background. I have certain political opinions. I'm a liberal or I'm a conservative. Correct? I'm this kind of a person. I'm that kind of person. I'm a wife. I'm a husband. I'm a renunciate. I'm a son. I'm a daughter. I'm a brother. I'm a sister. I'm a father. I'm a mother. We have this, it puts together, and it gives us our identity. And when we look at what to do, what we do according to psychology, is we make an idealized form of ourselves. So if you're a nice Indian housewife, you think, okay, I want to be the perfect Indian housewife. What would the perfect Indian housewife do in this situation? And that's how we make our decisions. We may not realize that that's how we make our decisions, but that's how we make our decisions. I'm a loyal member of ISKCON. What would a loyal member of ISKCON do in this situation? I'm a political conservative. What would a political conservative do in this situation? Everything is based around identity. I don't really have the time to prove that to you. But when people want to psychologically manipulate others like advertisers, they play to identity. The identity you have or the identity you want to have. Your idealized identity. You want to be a rich, successful person? Buy this car. That's what rich, successful people do. I remember once visiting a fairly newly married couple in America. They'd been married maybe a couple of years. And they had, I don't know if you all relate to this, but they had what we call in America a kitchen table. And the husband said to me, well, we've only been married a couple years. We can still eat on our kitchen table. But after you've been married 5 or 6 years, people expect you to have a dining room table. So he's thinking, you know, I'm a good American husband, and therefore I'm expected after 5 years to provide a dining room table. Does this make sense to you? Are you following this? I can give you one example that in one state in America, in Texas, they were having a big problem with people throwing rubbish and trash on the side of the road, and it was a very severe problem, much worse than in other places. And they had tried punishments and property, nothing was working. So they did some research that the people who were throwing the rubbish were pretty much all young men. So they decided that they were going to appeal to these young men's sense of identity. And certain states in America, just like in India, certain states really have their own mood, isn't it? You know, not just that I'm Indian, but I'm from Tamil Nadu or I'm from Bengal. Is it right? Right?
They always speak other state language. They feel like shame.
Yes, yes. So there may be some real state consciousness, not just national consciousness. So we have that in America also. So the people in Texas, Texas is one of the largest states in America, and it used to be its own country. It used to be a separate country at one point, sort of California. And the people there had this mood that, you know, we are really independent, rugged people. So they made this advertisement with these two football players who were from Texas and who were very famous, not just for being football players, American football, not like soccer, you know, the big guys. So, you know, not just for being football players, but for being Texan football players. And they're walking on the side of the road and they see some soda cans and they pick it up and they say, who did this? You big guys, you know. The other guy picks one up and says, I don't know, but when I see him, I got a message for him. Oh yeah, what's that? And he squeezes the can and he says, don't mess with Texas. So of course that was also very clever, so he could remember, don't mess with Texas. But the guys who were throwing the rubbish, they saw these football guys as their idealized self. Oh, that's what I want to be. I want to be a tough Texas guy. And they're saying, you know, tough Texas guys, they don't mess with Texas. Well, very soon after running those advertisements, they had less rubbish on the streets than they had in any other state in America. They were appealing to identity. So another story is in St. Lucia, they had a parrot that only lives in St. Lucia, doesn't live anyplace else, and the local people were eating it. It was an endangered bird. And so the government called in some ecological specialists and advertising specialists, how can we save the bird? So these advertisers, they made the bird into like the official bird of St. Lucia. You know, this is our St. Lucia bird. And people started feeling some pride in this bird, so they stopped killing it and eating it. You know, if you just said to people, well, you've got to do it for the ecology, you've got to do it for the little bird, you've got to do it, you know. But this is for us, it's for our bird. So everything we do starts with identity. Just like we say in Krishna consciousness, it starts with sambandhigyan. So one time Prabhupada asked the devotees, what's the first thing you do when you preach? They say, we tell them that there's a God. He said, no, first thing is you're not this body. So first it has to start, Krishna starts with sambandhigyan. Dehi nasminita dehe. You have to know who you are. If you have a false identity, everything else that comes after that is false. And sin means something that's false. Sin does not just mean, it does, but it doesn't only mean something that's a rule in some sacred book that you're not supposed to do because God and the sages don't want you to have any fun. I'm not connecting. Okay. All right. Sin doesn't just mean something that's a rule that says, now don't do this or you won't have any fun. We don't want you to have any fun. We want you to suffer. That's not what a sin is. A sin is something that's against my nature. That's what a sin is. Just like with this cup. So it has water in it. So drinking the water is in harmony with my body. But eating the cup isn't. And if I eat the cup, I will suffer. Now just like I went down to Lloyd Bazaar the other day. I think I told you I saw a pig sleeping in the sewer. Now the pig can sleep in the sewer and not get sick because sewers and pigs, it fits with their nature. But if I sleep in the sewer, I'm going to get very sick because this body I have and the sewer are incompatible. A sin means doing something that's against truth, doing something that's false, something that's not real. Another very simple example here. So there's a door and there's a wall. If I try to walk through the wall, I will suffer. Because walls are not designed to walk through. Now, does that mean that the person who designed this building designed it because they wanted me to get hurt on the wall?
No.
No, it has different purposes. So as soon as I use something for a wrong purpose, I suffer. Now, why do I use something for a wrong purpose? Because I have a wrong identity. If I think I have a body that can walk through walls, and therefore I try to walk through the wall, I will get hurt. But I have a wrong identity. I have to know this body I have is not capable of walking through walls. I'm sure, I know for sure, because Prabhupada says so, that there are beings on higher planets that are born being able to walk through walls. They're born with all the eight mystic perfections. So if you're born with the eight mystic perfections, then you can walk through the wall without getting hurt. But I can't. So if I want to walk out of this room and be happy, I have to know who I am. I have to have the right identity. I actually know one devotee, a sannyasi, who when he was a little boy, he thought he was Superman. He jumped off of his roof and broke his arms. So as soon as you get the identity wrong, you will engage in sin. What does sin mean? It means anything that's not in harmony with who you are. Therefore, the root of all suffering. Here's where we have suffering. Corrupted karma means suffering. And, you know, really severe corrupted karma, you have legal difficulties, you're ugly, you're born in a bad family, you have some, you know, incurable disease. But any kind of suffering starts with the wrong identity. So I think I'm something that I'm not, and therefore I do things that are not in harmony with who I am. Like I try to eat food that's not, just like we say with meat eating, that a human body is not designed to eat meat, right? Isn't that one of our arguments? The kind of teeth we have, the kind of saliva we have, the length of our intestines is not harmonious with being a meat eater. So therefore, if you eat meat, you get diseases. So as soon as you have the wrong identity, then you get kutam. You get a general inclination towards sin. It must come if you have the wrong identity. Has to. As soon as I think I'm something that I'm not, I will want to do things that are not in accord with me. Logic? Yes? As soon as I think I'm something that I'm not, I will want to do things that are not in accord with my real self. Have to. Other than be no meaning to thinking I'm something that I'm not. That then translates to very specific. It starts developing, it starts focusing. And I'll get a specific desire. I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do this. So this is the thinking, feeling, willing. And this is the action. Actually do something sinful. Now there's degrees of sin. Anything that's not prema bhakti is to some extent a sin. It's unnatural. So when I do something sinful, I get a reaction. Now, the reaction doesn't usually come immediately. Sometimes, if I walk in the wall, I get an immediate reaction. But the reaction may be delayed. So generally, there's some delay, aparoda. I don't generally get the reaction immediately. This is, it's waiting to happen. Prabhupada gives the example, you've done a crime, and you haven't yet been arrested. So this unmanifested leads to parabdha, but it also leads back to the general inclination, keeps the cycle up. So the more that we do sins, the more we're inclined to do sins. It reinforces that whole identity. So karma is trying to take care of this stage. But be a nice person, be a pious person, don't do sinful things, do pious things. By the way, what we mean by pious things are things that are closer to truth. So mode of ignorance is very far from truth. Mode of passion has a little truth in it. Mode of goodness has a lot more truth in it. Transcendence is holy truth. W-H, not H. Entirely truth. So you could say anything under prema bhakti is sinful, but we have a dividing line. These things we're going to call pious, and these things we're going to call sinful. So people say, well, just do pious activities. That doesn't change your identity. You're still trying to do something that's not you. And if you're trying to do something that's not you, you know, you're going to mess up sometimes. Then you have gyan. You know, gyan is trying to change your identity, but it doesn't go far enough. Gyan just says aham brahmasmi, but it doesn't go to Jivaraswara Paya Krishnara Nityadasa. It doesn't go to, you know, I'm a soul. Okay, but what do I do? What's my activities? What's my natural food? So gyan is just like saying, okay, don't eat meat. But what should I eat? It doesn't give you what to do instead. Therefore, it cannot conquer that identity. So bhakti gets rid of all suffering because it goes to the level of identity. Who am I? So then we start thinking, I'm a soul. I'm a servant of Krishna. What will a servant of Krishna do in this situation? Burjan Prabhu is really, really good about going in that direction. I remember once going to him and saying, Prabhu, I'm really concerned about this. You know, I'm upset. I want to fix this. And he looked at me and he said, you're a servant. Is that your service? I said, no. He said, then it's not your service. And I find this is just very, very helpful. Many times when devotees come to me for advice on this or that, I may say to them, okay, what's your service? How do you know it's your service? Who gave you that service? Who authorized you? How do you know this is, you know, what's the boundaries of what is your service and what's not your service? Recently, one of my friends, her husband lost his job, and when they got married, she said, you know, don't ever make me leave Vrindavan. And now he's thinking he may have to leave Vrindavan to get a job. And she told me, well, you'll have to leave without me. You know, I'm only going to stay in Vrindavan. And I said, well, maybe Krishna has some service for you someplace else. You know, you're a servant. It's not just that you say, I have to be here, I have to do this, I have to do that. Where our master calls, we go. But that's a sense of identity. So bhakti eliminates suffering not just in some sort of, not just like in the yogic way. You know, the yogis can put themselves into a trance where they don't feel any bodily pain. And again, that's something everybody here could learn how to do in 15 to 30 minutes. It's not a difficult thing to learn to do. But that's not how the devotee gets rid of suffering. The devotee gets rid of suffering by going to the root. All right, we have, yes?
So you said that if we don't get that we're not this body, then the rest is sin.
So yes.
Most of us, although we hear it, we don't realize it. So the rest is just sin.
Well, obviously you're realizing it. You wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be sitting here.
We don't live by it.
You don't?
I mean, if I...
You don't? You don't? What are you doing here? What are you doing here in Vrindavan, listening to Rupa Goswami's book? Give yourself a little more credit.
No, but if I realizing and living, but I'm not this body, I would probably think differently. I would probably just be jumping up and down here somewhere. So I don't know.
I think you might be listening to Rupa Goswami's book if you thought you were not this body. I think you're already living, you know, the activities of someone who at least believes that they're not this body.
Yeah, it's not about the belief, but it's...
Well, as you live that gradually, because it's real, it becomes more and more manifest to you. But aren't we all doing that?
But we're still so identified with the body.
Okay. But we're not making decisions based on that so much anymore. Probably very little. Probably we're making this, instead of making decisions and thinking, you know, well, let's see, I'm a pious Norwegian housewife. I'm a teacher. We're making decisions that I'm a servant of my guru, I'm a servant of Krishna. I want to be a devotee. And that's what's driving your decisions, I'll bet. At least a good portion of them. Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Why would I come to Vrindavan if you didn't believe you were a soul? What would you come here for?
It's not about the belief, it's more...
No, what would you come here for, please?
Association.
What would you come here for? Seriously.
The view.
What would you come here for? If you just thought that you were this body...
Shopping.
You wouldn't even do that if you didn't think you were a servant of Krishna. You'd shop someplace else.
She said association, so devotees.
Association with devotees. Why would you come here? Is there a material purpose to come here? I mean, you might come here if you're like a social welfare worker. And you could come to clean up the Jamuna and feed the hungry people and something like that. But I mean, why would you come here? I can't think of a reason to come here if I don't want to be a devotee.
Oh, there's a lot of real estate value here.
Oh, you can come here and make money.
You can do big business.
I did to see it, nothing like that. So, yeah, you could come here and make a lot of money. But none of us are any of you here for that? Any of you buying land in Vrindavan and selling it at 10 times the price and building high rises? I mean, that's not what we're doing. We're here because we've accepted that I'm a soul and I'm part of Krishna and I'm a servant of Krishna, and that's why we decide to come here. And some of us in this room have gone through great sacrifices and austerities to come here. And there's definitely austerities with staying here. Now, I was not brought up to wash my clothes by hand in a bucket. I wasn't. Why am I washing my clothes by hand in a bucket? You think I enjoy that? I'm doing that because I'm cultivating the identity that I'm a servant of Krishna. Correct? Right? Yes? So don't sell yourself so short. Why are you chanting Hare Krishna? To go to heaven? I mean, why are you chanting Hare Krishna? Because you see, I'm a soul and I want to connect with Krishna. Isn't that why you're chanting?
Yes.
Yes, there you go. And whatever we're still doing based on a material identity, yes, it's causing us suffering. And we're still suffering because of previous activities which Krishna is allowing to come to us to help purify us. I believe everyone in this room is making an effort to change our identity and to function on the basis of that changed identity. That's why we're all sitting here doing this. Why would we be doing this otherwise? I mean, maybe there's somebody here in this room that this is part of their material body, but I don't think so. Not with Rupa Goswami's work. I mean, maybe if we were studying Manasamhita or something. But who would study Rupa Goswami's work otherwise? Unless some of you here are just academic scholars who have no real interest in bhakti and you're just studying Rupa Goswami's work for a theoretical perspective. Anybody here like that? No? Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah, you're talking about liking yourself. So like yourself more, you know? Don't be so hard on yourself. Okay, so we have the, Prabhupada gives the example of the criminal who's not been arrested for that. Okay. Now, once you're free from suffering, your life becomes auspicious. By the way, does freedom from suffering mean that no bad things happen to you anymore? No, sorry.
Is it more just perception of suffering?
It's perception of suffering. Yeah, I really want to apologize to everybody because if you started bhakti with the idea that you would have no more external suffering, you might as well leave now and do something else because it's not going to work. Of course, nothing you do is going to work with that one, so it's not going to work. It's not that if you take up bhakti, you'll never, you know, break a bone, and you'll never get a disease, and nobody will ever be angry at you, and nobody will ever hurt you or take anything from you. That's not the reality. However, your perception of it will change. So that's on different levels. One level is very much like the yogis. They're absorbed in samadhi and they don't even feel what's happening in their body, or they don't experience it as pain. So that again it's a mechanical thing. Anyone could learn how to do that. You could learn how to put your mind in such a way. Thank you. You could learn to put your mind in such a way that you would not experience pain as pain. You would just say, "Oh, that's interesting." You'd say, "Oh, that's interesting. I just broke my arm. Oh, look at how the bone's like that. That's really interesting. Oh, I guess I better go to the doctor and have that fixed. How fascinating." Seriously. So part of the freedom from distress is that you're absorbed in something else and you're aware, your awareness of things, of pain and pleasure in the body is just not there. Now, the absorption of something else, though, is not mechanical. The absorption in something else is love. You want to share something?
Yeah,
no, them I'm asking. Are you done or you want to share something?
No, I was asking what type of suffering?
What type? Any type. Adiyatmika, adidaivika, everything. Everything. Body pain, mind pain, other people pain, insects pain, cows pain, monkey pain. Too hot pain, too cold pain, too dry, too wet. Put it all together, the whole thing. And the other reason you don't see suffering as suffering is not just because you're so detached. that you're in a state of bliss and you just don't even notice it, which is part of it. But also you see that everything is Krishna's adventure. That you're actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains this so nicely in Jayavidharma, and if I had a printer here, I would have printed it out and read it to you. Where he says that the material world is also Krishna's Leela, and if we can see that we're in Krishna's Leela, then we will exult in our situations. And if we experience misery, that is our own responsibility. So Krishna's Leela is full of adventure. It's full of conflict. There has to be a problem. If there's no problem, there's no story. And we all love stories. Everybody loves stories. We all love stories because Krishna loves stories. He's always in the middle of a million of them. Sometimes he's the hero, and sometimes one of his devotees is the hero. And there's some problem that he has to solve. His friends are in the demon's mouth, or you know, Indra's pouring rain, or Radharani's mother-in-law's locked her up in the house, or something. There's some problem that has to be solved, and that's what's fun. So the devotee has fun being in Krishna's story. And when you're in a story, you don't know how it's going to turn out, and it's sometimes scary. But you know Krishna's always going to win, and he's always going to win in the end. So that's another way to be free from suffering. Just the detachment and the equipoise, because I know I'm not this body, that's not everything. Okay. Once you get freedom from suffering, you have a life of auspiciousness. And there's four aspects to this auspiciousness. First of all, your life becomes so auspicious that it becomes attractive to everyone. It's a wonderful, joyful life, free from suffering, that everybody would say, yes, I want that life. Because auspiciousness has to be auspicious for everyone. It's not relative. Material happiness is relative. You know, I like bitter melon, you don't like bitter melon. You like chili, I don't like chili. What's auspicious for you is not auspicious for me. Like that Brahmin who cursed Mahaprabhu, you won't have any material happiness, and he was happy that he wouldn't have any material happiness. So he considered that auspicious, but most people wouldn't consider it auspicious. But bhakti is auspicious in that it's auspicious for everyone. Everyone finds, yes, I want this. And it actually benefits everyone. So again, materially, the same thing doesn't benefit everyone. Different people are benefited by different things. Example the Prabhupada gives is the animals in the Jarakanda forest. Whereas materially, when you try to do it, it doesn't work. And Prabhupada gives the example of the United Nations, where they try to benefit everybody, but still they're fighting. I think there's maybe 40 wars going on in the world right now. It's not that the United Nations meet and everybody says, oh yes, 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 fine, now we all love each other. It doesn't solve the problem. So that the first quality is attracts everyone, second quality benefits everyone. Third quality is that you get saintly qualities. Wouldn't we like to have saintly qualities? Are we tired of our bad qualities?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm really tired of my bad qualities. And I can't seem to get rid of them. They just won't go away. You know, I'm thinking, okay, I got rid of it. I finally got rid of this problem. And then Krishna says, oh, really? Try this situation. And I say, whoops, there it is again. You know? So it can be very frustrating. You know, we really try to be good people with good qualities. But the only way you can actually have saintly qualities is Krishna consciousness. Is it all right again if I go just a few minutes over?
Yes.
Is that all right? Anybody else? Is that okay? Yes?
Yes?
No?
Yes.
Yes? Yes, okay. If you say no, that's all right to say no. And I'll just adjust my tomorrow. So Prabhupada talks about here how the non-devotees have no good qualities. So let's look at the quality of honesty. Who here is totally 100% honest?
Just kidding.
Isn't that interesting? I've asked this question to many people, and nobody ever raises their hand. goes, then there comes a situation where I'm not willing to be honest anymore. What is this situation? It's some sort of fear. I start being afraid, oh, if I'm honest in this situation, I'm really going to suffer. And when the fear gets big enough, my honesty is gone. And this is true with everything. You can be peaceful, 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 peaceful. At a certain point, you become angry. Right? Okay. This line is fear. Now, the more you're in the mode of ignorance, the lower down your line is. And the closer you are to goodness, the higher your line is. So the more that you're peaceful and free from fear, the more difficult and trying situations you're still going to be honest in. But as long as there's any fear, there'll come a point where you're going to abandon that good quality. What that means is we don't really have the good quality at all. What we really have is self-preservation and self-centeredness. And I'm willing to do something until something with myself is threatened. Now, when you're really Krishna conscious, then you realize I can't be hurt by anything. I'm a soul. I can't be harmed by any weapon. I can't be hurt by anybody. I'm indestructible and eternal. No one ever has been able to hurt me, and nothing's ever been able to hurt me, and nothing ever will hurt me. And therefore, you have no fear. Abhaya Charanaravindava. You have no fear. You become fearless. Another way of saying fearless is peace. Another way of saying fearless is courage. And your courage comes from the fact that I'm an eternal, indestructible soul, number one. Number two, that Krishna's in control and whatever happens to me is going to be not only good, but fun. Because that's what Krishna's like. He's a 15, 16-year-old boy, and all he ever does is fun things. And I'm part of his group, and so he is having fun. And that whatever I need, I'm going to get. So I just can't be hurt or threatened by anyone. In that state, one actually has all good qualities. One will have all good qualities in all circumstances. Now, generally that happens gradually. Generally, as we perform devotional service, our line gets higher and higher and higher and higher. It will take more and more and more and more and more threatening situations before you become dishonest, or before we become angry, or before we become lusty, or before we become greedy, or something like that. It becomes more and more and more difficult for us to let go of that good quality. But we finally only come to really having the good qualities once we've achieved courage and peace. And we only achieve courage and peace when we recognize both Bhagavatam Sarvalokamesharam Suridam Sarvabhutanam Yadvanam Shanti Vachati. And we talked before how in the yoga ladder people achieve peace in another way. So this again has to do with identity. There's a real relationship between Kleshagni and Shubhada. That the only way I can be free from fear is not to identify with this material world. Because this material world, if you have material identification, this is a scary place. And Prabhupada says in Krishna book, the materialists think everything is very aggressive, and the devotees see everything as happily situated. So in your material consciousness, you think everyone's out to get me, you know, everybody's selfish and greedy and envious, and I've got enemies all around me, and the weather is terrible, and this is bad, and that's bad, and I've got to fight to survive. You know, when you're Krishna conscious, you see, wait a minute, everything is Krishna, and everything's controlled by Krishna. So, would be any other process, because it doesn't get to that root identity, I mean, even Jnana Yoga, they can bring you to the peacefulness that you're a soul, but they can't bring you to having fun with Krishna. So you can get to the peacefulness of I'm an indestructible soul, but you can't get to the other step, which is a really nice place to go. You're not just, you know, I'm an indestructible soul. Like, everything is Krishna taking me on an adventure. And then the last thing we're going to discuss quite briefly, because we'll discuss it more tomorrow in the happiness that derives liberation, is that Krishna consciousness provides a happiness that's superior to material happiness and even to spiritual happiness and liberation. It's eternal, it's full of variety, it includes all the other happiness, and again, it's based on our real identity. Okay. Give some examples of like Kolavicha Shudhar, who was offered all the mystic perfections and owning a planet, but he wasn't interested because he had something higher. So this goes back to a theme I mentioned before, that the way that we control our mind and our senses is not through
suppressing
and repressing, but through being
honest.
Definitely honest.
Engaged,
fully satisfied. We're trying to fully satisfy our senses in devotional service. That's the only place our senses can be fully satisfied. All right. Tomorrow we will finish the rest of chapter one. After this, most classes will be just one class per chapter. So tomorrow, please, any questions on any part of chapter one? The three that we covered today, the last ones we covered very, very briefly. We talked about getting rid of suffering and being auspicious, bhakti being auspicious, and a little bit about happiness. So any question on that, we're on the end of the chapter. We'll cover those questions tomorrow, finish the chapter, and hopefully Krishna will do something fun. Thank you very much. Advice to Prabhupada, advice to Krishna.